Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
This episode is supported by FX's Clipped, the scandalous story of the 2014 Clippers owner's racist remarks captured on tape and heard around the world. The series charts the tape's impact on a dysfunctional basketball organization striving to win against their reputation as the most cursed team in the league. Starring Lawrence Fishburne, Jackie Weaver, Cleopatra Coleman, and Ed O'Neill. FX's Clipped, streaming June 4th, only on Hulu.
Mirror man, you twist and turn my mind until I don't know who I am. Mirror man.
Good morning and welcome to a new edition of the Arsenal Opinion Podcast. It's a Thursday therapy session after a massive win of the weekend against Spurs in the North London Derby. I'm joined by Jacob Hawley. I'm joined by Matt Candela. And we are here to, it's another good therapy session. Everything's going well in life. Jacob, how are you doing today?
I'm really good, man. It's not just things are going well. Things have slowed down a little bit. That feels very nice. April was mad, wasn't it? That was too much.
Too much.
I'm very happy that it's back to one game a week. That I don't want to say I'm happy that the finish line's in sight, because I've got to be honest, I've loved this season. I'm going to be quite gutted when it's over. But it does feel more manageable now. The fact there's only three games left. We know where we are. We know what's going to happen. I don't feel like I need to check any fixture lists anymore. And yeah, feeling really good, man.
Matt, it's just riffing off Jacob there. Mark Goldbridge did a big rant about how boring the Premier League was, and a whole bunch of influencers have followed along the way. Do you think this season's been boring, or do you think that's just what you say when you're a Man United fan?
I think it's boring when you're not in the mix. Any season is. Do you remember when we finished eighth and eighth? I was bored at this point of the season. I was desperate for it to be over. I was thinking about transfer targets, thinking about next season. You know, you just want to get it over with as quickly as possible once you've got nothing to play for. But the joy of Arsenal under Arteta in recent years is we had fourth to play for, we had the league to play for, and this year we're pushing it further than ever before. So I don't think it's boring in that sense. I think people will say it's boring if Manchester City win a fourth league title in a row. But, you know, I'm not subscribing to that. It's been a brilliant season so far.
Yeah, it was nice to have 4 days off. We've done something like 58 podcasts in 112 days this year. So having a few days off felt good, but glad to get back on the horse today. We've got an action-packed show, loads of stuff happening with Arsenal. And what I love about this part of the season is the transfer gossip mill starts revving up. Agents are trying to hawk their players. Clubs are trying to get rid of theirs. So there's going to be plenty to talk about. But before we get into that, we've got a little tradition, and it's called
Hottest of Takes.
Hottest of Takes.
The Hottest of Takes.
The AOP Hottest of Takes. Make it spicy.
Jacob Hawley, we're going to go to you this week for the Hottest of Takes. Where are you taking it?
I'm doing a... it's a reaction to Sunday, and it's a reaction to a season of keeping an eye over our shoulder at Tottenham Hotspur. And my Hottest of Take, I think Ange is crap. I think he's rubbish, and it's as much to do with what I saw on Sunday. By the way, I don't think that Spurs were awful on Sunday. I thought that they were let down by his tactics, and the reaction since then, the things he's saying in the media, he's been asked about Ben White and Vicario, and he's given it. Oh, I don't care about that, mate. He's been asked about the set pieces, and he's you know, correctly said that that's something he's been criticised for his whole career, the way his teams defend from set pieces, and he's He's insisting that's not where he needs to spend his time. I've got to be the arrogance of the man, the petulance and the refusal to accept that there's areas to improve in his management. He reminds me of late Wenger. He really does. And I've got a memory that stretches back to October where there were Spurs fans claiming they were in the title race. And fast forward to May, he's got a worse record than Antonio Conte did with Tottenham at this stage of the season. Antonio Conte, who they all couldn't stand and who they all wanted rid of very fast. I'm looking at this guy and the 15 days that they had before that game on Sunday, that was what scared me. I've got to be really honest with you. I feel like we'd played 15 games in April and they'd had 15 days rest. And you go into that game and you say to yourself, right, what are the three things you have to do to stop Arsenal? First of all, you don't let them beat you at set pieces. That's what we're dangerous at. You don't let them score goals from set pieces. We score two. The other thing you do with Arsenal, you don't let Saka get one-on-one with a fullback. Straight away on a transition, he's one-on-one with Ben Davies. He scores a goal. The third thing, if you want to score a goal against Arsenal with not many minutes left, you know what you don't do? Just spam crosses from the touchline because David Raya's better at catching them than anyone else in the league. And if he doesn't catch them, we've got four centre-backs there who are all 6 foot plus. He's the most naive, arrogant, petulant manager that I've seen at Spurs in such a long time. And I hope that they do still get sort of, you know, get attached to his charisma and get attached to the way he speaks in press conferences. Because I hope they stick with him for a long time. Because I have to say, I've not felt less worried about the trajectory of that football club in a long time.
Well, that was a spicy take. I love it. I agree. It's that Wenger-like dedication to crazy, wild football in a time that doesn't need it. He's like, I'm not going to practice the important things. We're going to play our way. Everyone's going to have fun, but it's probably not going anywhere. Matt, where are you going to take your hottest of takes this week?
So my hottest of takes is the reaction to Sunday as well. I can't believe it's Thursday. And Spurs are still bleating about how unfair it all is. Still in my feed. And I think I must have done something to the Twitter or X algorithm by following or responding to Spurs fans over the weekend. Because my feed is full of Spurs fans now, which I don't appreciate. But they're absolutely rattled. But the thing that I didn't really expect is for the media to follow suit. And one of the things I wanted to focus on is this analysis of Ben White. Has been absolutely ridiculous. And all of it centering around him tickling the goalkeeper's gloves, playing with the Velcro, being a general nuisance in the box. But you've got respected or maybe slightly less respected now journalists like Matthew Syed saying it's cheating and coming out and demanding that referees look at this more closely. And I propose...
Matthew Syed got involved?
Yes.
No.
Saying it's cheating. The dark arts is cheating. And I would propose that this wouldn't be the case if he was playing for England. I really don't. You look at the level of protection that England players have got. Look at Gary Neville kicking Reyes down the touchline. Oh, well, that's what you got to do. That's just what you get done. Think about Harry Kane and that move that he's sort of trademarked where he backs into players and lets them fall on the floor backwards. Think about Alan Shearer and the running forearms. Just think about some of the title challenges we're playing. Why not the same level of scrutiny around Sadio Mane and the way he used to elbow someone in the face every single game? But who have they decided to pick on? Who have they decided to overanalyze? Who have they decided to call a cheat? Ben White. And I think it's because Ben White has made Gareth Southgate look very, 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 very stupid. Because there was a time when everyone said, right back is the least of our problems. We've got Trent, we've got Cole Walker, we've got Reece James. We don't need Ben White. And guess what's happened? Reece James isn't even in the conversation. Trent can't play right back against decent players. He's a fantastic player and I still find a place for him in the team, but it's not at right back. And suddenly Ben White is really, really important to England. And I think the fact that he's turned his back on them is the reason for this crazy overanalysis, these accusations of cheating. And like I said, I don't think it would be happening if he was playing for England.
The interesting thing about the whole Ben White England saga is England fans don't care. Nobody boos him in the grounds. I actually think that Ben White's antics, compared to some of, compared to the sort of Wayne Rooney's and the Harry Kane's of the world, I actually think they don't bother people because they're so funny. Ben White's got a clearly got a very dry sense of humor. And I think most people think it's quite amusing. Like undoing a goalkeeper's gloves at a set piece in the grand scheme of cheating is pretty low down the pecking order. It's quite amusing. But it's been very notable that the media has gone out of their way to whip up a frenzy about Ben White not wanting to play for England. And he doesn't get booed. There's no burning effigies of him at stadiums. No one cares. And I wonder whether that speaks to the decline of international football in the minds of Premier League fans overall. Because 15, 20 years ago, I think people would be booing him every touch in every stadium. I think there would be more of a problem online. But I don't see much discourse around Ben White online regarding England. The only discourse you see is that people think he's a shit. But I think Ben White probably thrives off that.
Yeah, and I just add something which is about dark arts, and I want to get your opinion, which is we were derided for having a soft underbelly for so many years. Meanwhile, Diego Costa was being Diego Costa, Sadio Mane was being Sadio Mane. All of these players were demonstrating that you needed to have something about you and you couldn't let yourself get bullied. I remember Bernd Leno in the opening game against Brentford, we lost 2-0, that infamous game, and was berated for not being strong enough, not pushing the striker out of the way, not commanding his box. And yet now it's happening, and there's no one saying, what's Vicario doing? Why doesn't he just give him a shove? Scream in his face, show some dominance. But instead, it's all on Ben White. And you know, the dark arts are part of being a winning Premier League football team. And where do you draw the line? Rotation fouling, standing over the ball when someone's about to take it, taking your time to get the ball to someone for a throw-in. You know, there's so many examples, and it's interesting that they've decided this is the dark arts rather than naivety, which is, I think, what Tottenham showed throughout the game on Sunday.
Jake, I think it's very funny that Arsenal's answer to not being masters of the dark arts and Arsenal's answer to having a soft underbelly is having the most metrosexual man in the world reintroducing that to our squad. It's like, how did Arsenal get tough again? How did Arsenal become difficult and hard again? Well, they got a man who wears eyeliner and fake tan to come and start pulling people's gloves up. He's the most North London hard man you could ever find. He's the most prawn sandwich brigade arsehole that we could ever get. But he's brilliant. And I think we love him for that. And I do think Arsenal fans have really, really taken to his... I mean, have you seen the flag that the away fans carry with them now, where it's Arsenal, Dubai, England in that order with a picture of Ben White on it? I think he's great. But I do also think he represents what kind of modern shithouser he is. And I don't know how much you've sort of read about him or listened to his interviews and stuff. He's a proper, like, public school boy, Ben White. He's from Poole. And he's one of those where he's a bit like Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain, who's also from that part of the world and also went to a good school. He could have been any kind of sportsman he wanted to, Ben White. If you read about him, he could have been a cricketer. He could have been a rugby player. He's just one of those people that's just good at sport. And I think there's something that he suits our club. Do you know what I mean? They're like a Francis Coquelin who just wanted to run around kicking people. That never really suited Arsenal. That wasn't the right kind of arsehole. Whereas Ben White is the right kind of hard man for this club. And I absolutely love him.
I agree. I love him. I love him as well. And the great thing about most of it, his agent wrote quite an interesting post and said, you know, like, players have got stuff going on behind the scenes. I'm sure that wasn't a reference to England, but I think Ben White is such an unbelievable pro. It feels like Arteta's tried to replace him a few times, but he's not budging from that side. Like, Jurrien Timber is a right back. I think he'll end up on the left. He's been fantastic. He gets better and better. There are so many layers to him. I think that's the other interesting thing about this whole Arteta era so far. The player that you start with isn't the player you finish with. And yes, when you think a player has hit a level, there's still another level to come. There's still, like, players transform with the system each year. There's a different sign. There's a different way of thinking. Like, it's very innovative to watch it. And Ben White epitomizes that for me. My hottest take's a very basic one. I'm not going to go too spicy, but I think Arsenal fans are massively underestimating Bournemouth Iraola's done an unbelievable job there. Since November, Bournemouth fifth for points in the league. Solanke's having an incredible season. They're very tactically astute and they can cause problems. And we've kind of got over this imaginary hump of Spurs. And as fans, we have definitely taken our foot off the panic gas. Like, I've been, you know, out in the back garden, pouring myself a glass of wine, smoking cigarettes, just relaxing, heading into this next game. And I really, really think we're going to be in for a tough game at the weekend. And I think we're going to be shocked how good Bournemouth are going to be and how charged they're going to be this weekend.
You don't think they're on the beach? You don't think that they're a mid-table team who've done what they have to do and they're taking their foot off the gas, no?
That's what I think they want you to think. It's a game of psychology here. They want you to think that they're fucking this game off. They're not. I am. You know, I'm really worried about an early goal. That's where my panic is placed at the moment. An early goal, like we're gonna have to do something late on. I want an easy game tomorrow. We've had too many rough games over the last month. Too much panic. That second half against Spurs aged me, and I don't want that against Bournemouth. But I feel like it's gonna be. I think Everton will be fine, but I think this Bournemouth one might be a bit difficult.
Yeah, it's difficult to disagree. I think the fans have got a major role to play. This is the last home game before the final game of the season. I think the final game of the season, if we need to win, we'll win comfortably. Famous last words. But this is the one that we need the fans right from the beginning to get behind. I think having a week's rest would have been great. I think we'll have a real chance to get into them tactically. I think you look at our points, expected points when we have more than 96 hours rest versus less than. And there's a big jump because I think one of our strongest attributes is Arteta's coaching. So hopefully we've got it figured out, and hopefully Saliba and Gabriel have enjoyed having, you know, a week without a midweek game to get themselves fully ready for the physical battle that Solanke's going to provide.
Yeah, and I have got a ticket for the last game of the season. So I'm very happy the community came strong for me. I think Johnny Cochran is still looking for one. So if you got a spare and you're looking to sell, Johnny's in the market. All right, let's move on to the first topic of conversation. The title is It's a London Thing. Title killers. Manchester City have got four games left. Three of those four are against London teams that could potentially do damage. Fulham are having a really impressive season. They've got lots of dangerous players in their side. West Ham have got the daddy factor. Daddy David Moyes is in the house and he might be able to hand Mikel Arteta the title. And Spurs, big Ange Postecoglou is getting flamed for his record and overall tactics by Jacob. Maybe that will motivate him to come good against Manchester City. That is a game at their famous bowl. Guys, is London going to come strong for Arsenal in the final three games of the season? Manchester City were absolutely garbage against Nottingham Forest. They squeaked it with a little bit of brilliance from Guardiola and Haaland. Matt, you know, you've spent a lot of time in London. What's your sense with the Fulham, Spurs and West Ham fans? Will they be willing their team on, or will they be on the beach dreaming of a summer?
I think Alex Ferguson used to say, or maybe it was Arsene Wenger when fighting out with Alex Ferguson, used to say it's so much harder to win the Premier League if you're a London club because of the derbies, because there's just that level of rivalry, the added spice that comes with playing London teams. And we've been really, really good at it over the last two, three seasons. What does it mean for Manchester City? Not a lot, in my opinion. I think you're looking for teams who have got something to play for versus looking at geography. And I'm looking at it and I'm going, West Ham might have something to play for, but Fulham don't. And I'm desperately hoping that Spurs do. And I think that's the key point of it. I think you're also looking for away games, Fulham away, Spurs away. There's obviously more chance of City dropping points than at home, I think. But is a London club going to do us a favour? Absolutely not. Is the extra level of motivation that Bernd Leno and Alex Iwobi going to mean anything? Absolutely not. So, you know, I don't think it really plays into it. I think it's more about where those teams are and what the game state is. I think if Fulham could get an early goal, we'd be in for an interesting match. But I don't think it's going to make any difference that they're coming to London.
Jacob, West Ham have had a good season. They basically ended Liverpool's title hunt. Spurs still have Champions League to play for. If they lose to Manchester City, arguably they are done for top four this season. The two German teams going into the Champions League final means there is definitely no fifth place in the Premier League. Do you think there's going to be any motivation for any of those sides to bring that Premier League back to London?
I think there should be mental health support groups set up for fans of football clubs that have been in title races with Pep Guardiola's Manchester City, because I've been losing my mind the last couple of months trying to convince myself where they're going to drop points, how they're going to drop points. I should not be tracking Spurs and Aston Villa's fixtures so that I can find out whether they're still in a race for fourth place to try and work out whether Spurs are going to be motivated to take points over. It's just mad. Like, years ago, it wasn't like this. I think we once won the Premier League title in the 90s with less than 80 points. I think Manchester United have lost, like, have gone like four or five games without a win in the last 10 and still won a title. It shouldn't be like this, that, you know, you're waiting for someone to blink over like a 20-game period and they might drop points once. But we're having to create these mad narratives of, you know, why Fulham might do it for us, why West Ham's connection, was it David Moyes caring about Arteta? And the truth of the matter is Manchester City are a far superior team to any of the teams they're going to play in the games remaining. And we are kind of hoping for a miracle. There is a part of me that just thinks they've been so spotless in every run-in recently. Surely at some point they've got to cock up a run-in. Do you know what I mean? Surely at some point they've got a drop, and they don't have a Gundogan this time, and they've lost a little bit of experience, and De Bruyne isn't what he used to be. But then Haaland comes on against Forest and scores that goal, and you think, oh, he's just going to go mad for the last few games, isn't he? He's just going to, it'll have taken Roy Keane's League Two comments to heart, and he's going to just go supernova. So I don't know. If every time City play in the next 3 weeks, I will convince myself there's a reason they'll drop points. And every time they'll prove me wrong. So I don't really know. All I hope is that we're saying that all of us are going. Hopefully Johnny can go as well. I just hope we can all go into the stadium last day of the season and it's still on. And we can be checking fixtures on a phone and we have a bit of hope. Because the sad truth is, when you're up against this Manchester City team, hope is all you can really ask for. Because there's no certainty that they're going to drop against any of these teams.
Well, that's depressing. I'm going in all in on the hope train. I'm not going to pick that emotional support jacket off the coat rack. I'm going all in. I think they can drop points. I think they're looking a little bit shaky. Teams are getting in behind them. Every single piece of luck has gone for that team this year. Every single piece. They are never involved in a disgusting refereeing controversy. There is never a red card. There is never an unjust penalty. Everything goes their way. They don't have any pain in their lives, ever. But these last three games, I think there could be some. Wolves have got at them before. Although they are slightly depleted, they'll have more players back than we did. I don't really hold much hope out for them. But Fulham, Spurs and West Ham, if we had those as the final three games of the season, we'd be like, listen, boys, this is going to be tough to extract 9 points from these games. I'm sure someone can do something. Fulham have been a very difficult side to play against this season. West Ham have got a lot of pacey players. If they let Bowen, players like that, get in behind them, like they did Forest, they're going to concede goals. And we have the best defence in the league. I think teams have been getting in behind Manchester City all season and just not taking their chances. All it takes is one of those teams to take those chances. Fulham have got dangerous players. Spurs have got dangerous players, and so have West Ham. So I'm holding out hope that something will happen. Although I don't hold out any. I think West Ham will get pumped 5-0 last game of the season. There's absolutely no way an exiting David Moyes is going to have any chance of rallying that crew.
So what you're basically saying is it's Fulham and Spurs away.
Fulham and Spurs away, yeah, definitely. Spurs has to do something. They have to do something.
But not if they lose to Chelsea tonight and Liverpool on Sunday.
Don't be a pessimist. Don't be a pessimist. This is the therapy session. We've got to be positive.
How weird is the atmosphere of that game going to be? Like, how strange is that going to be? Because I don't think Ange is going to be going, oh, right, let's make sure we lose, you know, so Arsenal don't win the title. I don't think Ange is going to do that. I don't think the players are going to do that. But their fans will. I know all their fans want to make sure that they drop points so we don't win the title. And to be fair, so would I. If the shoe was on the other foot, I'd want us rolling over. So it's going to be such a weird atmosphere.
Would you want them rolling over, though, Jacob? This is the small-time nature of Spurs fans. Someone complained in the comments section that we were being mean to Spurs fans. Grow up. The small-time nature of Spurs fans, that they would rather not be in the Champions League next season. They'd rather not have additional budget for better players. They'd rather be playing Quarabag in the last 32 of the Europa League. I find that baffling. I would hate to see Spurs win the Premier League. But if it was the difference between Thursday night football and Wednesday night football, I'd just suck it up.
But for me, the issue is, and you talk about luck, that Spurs game being rearranged to the last week of the season is bad luck.
They have someone in the fixture office.
Because if that had been 3-4 weeks earlier, it's a completely different game. Whereas my fear is that Spurs are out of the race for fourth by the time they play City. Because they've got two of their hardest games, both away from home, coming up within 3 days of each other.
How can you let Spurs have a 15-day break? Aston Villa, I think, played 3 games. Arsenal played 4 games in that space. But Spurs get a 15-day break and the Man City game gets kicked to the end of the season. Put it in that gap or shift things about. They could have moved the Brighton game. Absolutely disgraceful that happened. I'd love to know. I'd love to see the email chain of how that went down. Mm. And I'd love to pull up a sleeve and see if there's a North London cock on there. Because I've got my doubts, guys. I've got my doubts. Allegedly, whatever I have to say there to not be sued for calling the Premier League corrupt, I don't believe that. All right, let's move on to a more positive story. Jorginho is about to get a new deal. It's not an extension. It's a completely fresh deal. I think Chelsea probably picked up some of his wages when he moved over to Arsenal because he was on a big salary. It sounds like Arsenal are going to give him better terms. It might be an additional 2-year deal. Matt, is this a vibes addition? Is this, you know, you're losing Mo Elneny. You've got one of the most experienced players in the Premier League. Doesn't really rely on pace. Like, or is this celebrating his importance to the squad and, you know, the idea that perhaps Arsenal think this is a player that could deliver for us over the next 2 years? What do you think?
Well, first of all, Jorginho has been fantastic all season, so hats off to him. He absolutely deserves it. I don't know if he'll get 2 years out of him because there's been lots of rumours that, you know, he can't really train that well because his body just can't even handle intensive training. But he's a phenomenal player, and I sort of see him taking the Mo Elneny role a little bit, like stepping in as needed. We'll get runs of games as needed, experience in the Champions League. But for me, the biggest news about this is what I think it means for Thomas Partey, because I think Jorginho getting a two-year deal means Partey is off in the summer. I don't think we're doing both. I don't think we're keeping both. And so what does that mean? How do I feel about that? Well, I feel like Thomas Partey is a superior player to Jorginho, but it's like having a Ferrari that's in the garage all the time. Or do you want a 3 Series that just... you know, you can drive everywhere. It's beautiful. Works whenever you need it. And I think ultimately for a squad player, we're saying we don't need a Ferrari in the garage. We need a 3 Series on the road. And I think that's what we've got with Jorginho.
Jacob, we'll talk about Thomas Partey after. What do you think Jorginho has done for the side this season? And do you think he defied expectations?
Hugely. I mean, I think we have to go back to that January transfer window. What was it, just over a year ago, 14, 15 months ago, and say that was one of the best transfer windows we've had. When you look at the contribution he's had to our team, when you look at the contribution Trossard has had, and to be fair, not my favourite player, but Kivior as well, played a lot of games this season and we won most of them. I think Jorginho on the pitch gives us something that a lot of our other midfielders don't, and I certainly think we've seen the best of both Kai Havertz and Declan Rice. When Jorginho's been on the pitch, I think Kai especially started receiving balls in good areas when Jorginho came in. I think if you look back at the early part of the season. He was making a lot of good runs, Kai Havertz, and he wasn't being found. And then Jorginho came in and started finding him. I think he's really helped Declan Rice. And everything you hear tells you he's a really, really good person to have around the club. He looks after the younger players. He's great in the dressing room. He's doing his coaching badges. I think this is exactly the kind of player you want to keep around. And I'm really
he's
happy
be
to
a
hear
coach,
this.
Right? He's
of course
be some
he will.
Coach.
Of course he'll be a coach. And you know, you read any interviews with him. He speaks about the game brilliantly. He's an incredibly humble guy. And he seems to get on so well with Arteta. And yeah, I love this because I'd read the rumours about him returning to Italy. And by the way, what a credit to him that at this age, at this stage of his career, there are still big clubs in Italy who really want this guy. You know, I know you want to talk about Partey in a minute, but we're not hearing the same things with Thomas Partey, are we? We're not hearing the same interest with Thomas Partey. So I think, yeah, huge credit to Jorginho. Really glad he's staying. I think most of the work we do in the transfer window will actually be in midfield. And I think this makes it a little bit easier.
I like the talks of Jorginho doing his coaching badges. There was a really interesting article in The Athletic that it was, I think it was Jorginho was facing off against Ramsdale, who was a couple of goals down at halftime, and he completely re-engineered the team and won the game. I like having intelligent players around the club. And Arteta is a really young guy. He's surrounded by young guys. And it's going to be interesting with some of these older players, whether they do cycle into management. I was told that Granit Xhaka has the potential to be like a really top manager. Like apparently he really impressed during his coaching badges. I think Elneny is also doing his badges at Arsenal as well. So it's going to be interesting if Arteta is the one that inspires more coaches getting into the game than Arsene Wenger. But back to Jorginho, the player, he's had an absolutely fabulous season. The game doesn't really rely on pace. I don't think the problem is his issues with physicality. I think he's got a problem on the bottom of his foot. Plantar fascia or something like that. I don't know how you say it, but I think it's a problem on the bottom of his foot versus a total bodily breakdown like we've seen with Thomas Partey over and over again. But we need to keep experienced players in the squad, and having someone that's won a Champions League in there is always going to offer value. And it's nice to upgrade the Mo Elnenis of the world, but I still think he could deliver the goods next season in certain games. He's very intelligent, very calm, super brave. And if you're a young midfielder coming into Arsenal this summer with the hopes of taking over the mantle from Thomas Partey, what a player to have coaching you behind the scenes. So well done, Jorginho.
No one's getting rid of Elneny ever, is there? He just wants to stay at Arsenal forever. He'll take any job. He'll do his coaching.
They're sizing
badges.
Him up for the Gunnosaurus suit as we speak. They're getting him ready.
He will be there. He will be there.
Wynn needs a dog trainer. Elneny will be there.
Yeah, what a good guy, though. You know, like, just takes less money to stay at Arsenal because he just loves it and everybody loves him there. So, but I would suspect Mo Elneny will be finished this season. But he might pick up a job in, like, the under-18s or something. So we'll see. All right, let's move on to the next topic of conversation. David Ornstein's been dropping a lot of Man United would sell Rashford, but they don't actually want to. They don't really want to. He did the same with Arsenal. Edu and Jason Ato were in Saudi Arabia, but they weren't talking about players, apparently. We all know why they were out there. They were trying to ship Thomas Partey off. This is a geopolitical economic question wrapped inside an Arsenal need. Matt, going to go to you first on this one. Thomas Partey is obviously a player we need to shift off the wage bill, but do you feel like the Saudi football project has had some issues this year, and hearing the news that they're not as enthused about Mo Salah, do you think the chances of us shifting Thomas Partey and that big wage may have slipped a little bit? Have we missed our window of opportunity to shift Deadwood out there?
No, I don't think so. I think Saudi was all in the news last year for a number of reasons, but that league is going to get bigger and bigger. And better and better. It is just one of those things. And I think it's great that we're establishing relationships there because there's a lot of money there. So I think from us thinking strategically, building relationships in the same way we do with every other part of the world is really, really important. And I've always found the fans' perspective around Saudi Arabia just quite ridiculous, to be honest. I think it's I think it's a net positive that they want to build out a league, that they're promoting football, that they're trying to become more, quotation marks, westernized and not so reliant on oil and doing all of these things. And I think if we can shift some players there, all the better for us, because other people are doing it. Look at what Chelsea did. The only reason they're going to have any chance of staying within PSR is because they shipped some players there. So why would we hamstring ourselves and put our hands behind our back when there's opportunities?
Jacob, Matt's painting a very rosy picture of the Saudi football project there. Attendances have not been good. Certain players have complained about payments. Jordan Henderson couldn't hack it and ended up back. Ajax, there are a lot of players that are looking to exit there at the moment. What do you make of the Saudi project? And do you think that there is a chance that we could shift Thomas Partey with all his injuries to Saudi this summer?
I think the key is the injury thing. And I think that that's, as well as Thomas Partey, there was, and I know we're going to talk about this a bit later, but there was obviously news that we're potentially going to listen to offers for Gabriel Jesus. And I think the key thing with both of those players is, how mad would you have to be as a buyer to buy one of those players on the contracts they're on? I think Partey's got a year left on 200 grand a week. I think Jesus has got 2 years left on 265 grand a week. How mad would you have to be as a buying club to buy one of those players whilst they're as injury prone as they are? Well, maybe Saudi Arabian clubs are mad enough. And maybe, you know, the pace of their league and the intensity of the league means that a player with those injury problems could get by over there. I don't know much about it. I don't like it personally. I do think there's an element of sport washing with it. And I don't know if I've said this on this pod before, but I think you're really correct to point to players getting fed up over there. We've heard from players like Emerick Laporte, who left for Manchester City, speaking about how he doesn't like the lifestyle. Jordan Henderson pointed to the lack of competition and the lack of fans in the stadium. And I'm a huge boxing fan. And that is one thing where Saudi are having a really good time with the Riyadh season. They're managing to stage events that were never going to be staged before. Fights that wouldn't have happened are now happening because His Excellency is offering the money. And I have to say, I'm quite proud of football and quite proud of footballers who, despite being offered huge amounts of money, are still willing to hold their hands up and go, I'm really sorry, this isn't the game that I was raised playing and this isn't what I want to do. Whereas boxers are more than happy to go over there and take the money. And obviously, it's very different things. And obviously, with boxers, they have to think about their health and everything like that. But it does make me very proud that footballers are saying, I'm really sorry, but due to the lack of the competitive nature of the league, due to the lack of attendance from fans, this isn't for me. I do wonder how that would influence players' desire to move there. We know that Edu's over there trying to broker deals. I don't hear much about players' agents going over there to try and broker deals. We've heard in the past that Partey himself would be resistant to a move to Saudi. I do remember around January time, Fabinho and Firmino were both apparently singing like canaries about how they didn't want to come to Saudi, how they wish they could return to Europe. And they're two Brazilian players who Gabby Jesus might know quite well. So that's going to be the interesting thing for me. I'm sure clubs are going to be more than willing to take the money from Saudi Arabia. It's whether players are still willing to go there.
Very interesting points. Yeah, I think Thomas Partey is the only one that would try and shift there, because there is another player that they're talking about exiting. Gabby Jesus, Arsenal were willing to listen to offers for the Brazilian. This summer is going to be very difficult in the Premier League if PSR rules hold. There's not going to be a lot of money swilling around, and clubs are going to have to sell before they buy. Gabby Jesus, when he's fit, is one of the most chaotic players in the Premier League. He really added a different dynamic to our game, but he has lacked availability. He has been in the media saying that he's been playing with pain all year. He's even spoke about surgery. Matt, who's the market for Gabby Jesus now? He's a top quality player. You can't argue it. Someone will take a risk on him, or will they, in this market?
I think they could. I was chatting to a Chelsea fan, and he said, we'd take Gabby Jesus. Of course we would. We haven't got a striker. We'd love to have Gabby Jesus. And that's well aware of where it's at. And, you know, we're telling the injury narrative, which is absolutely true, but he's been available for quite a long time now. It's a bit like Smith Rowe. It's like, it feels like he's permanently injured, but he's actually been fit for the majority of the season. It's just not making an impact or not getting the minutes. So I think there are buyers out there. Obviously, the wages are a sticking point, especially with PSR, because I think he's on 250 or something like that. So I'm sure we'd be interested in looking at offers. But again, everything's interconnected. It's like we've got Eddie and we've got Gabby Jesus. Which one? I think we're going to get rid of one of them. But I think Eddie is an easier player to get rid of. It's pure profit as a hairlender. He's younger. He's always fit. Feels like he's got a high ceiling that can be hit if he gets the minutes. Feels like he's guaranteed Premier League proven. So I think ultimately it's just going to be way easier to shift Eddie than it is to shift Gabby Jesus. And ultimately it might end up being the same type of money involved because of the transfer fee that you could get for Eddie, the way you can take it, less wages, all of those sorts of things. So I expect Gabby Jesus to stay another year, but maybe relegated to the Eddie role.
Jacob, Chelsea collect injury-prone players. So that might be a home for him. Do you think that it's more realistic that he might end up at Atleti or Barcelona this summer, maybe a league with less intensity than the Premier League, you know, where there's an opportunity to absolutely rip it up?
I think it's all money, man. I talk about Saudi Arabia. I reckon there's going to be a long queue for the Eurostar this summer. Once the Mbappe deal goes through and PSG are looking for a forward, I'd say there's going to be Edu in that queue. I would say there's going to be Manchester United representatives with a nice big spreadsheet about Marcus Rashford on their way to Paris trying to pitch those ideas. I think it's really interesting with Jesus. The fact that he said that he might not make the Copa America because he needs surgery on his knee, that tells me he's not going anywhere. And I thought it was very, very strange, that Atletico article, because I don't know why the club would want to stick that out with three games to go. I think if you really wanted to shift him, you could stick that out in a few weeks' time. I don't know why you'd do it now. I don't know why the player would want to do it, because from my perspective, the player's not going to be looking for a move. I've heard it's 265 a week he's on. There is no way that he's getting that anywhere at 27 years old on one leg. It's just not happening. You're not slipping into a medical on a crutch and signing for that money anywhere. I think you look around Europe, mate, you know, if Napoli move Osimhen, are they going to want to sign a forward? But do they have the money? There was rumours of Juve wanting him a few weeks ago. Do they have the money for Gabriel Jesus? I don't know.
They find it.
Maybe they do, but how stupid do they have to be to sign him when he's on his way out of surgery? Do they wheel him straight from Whittington Hospital into Italy? What do they do? Chelsea, maybe. That's an interesting one. I hadn't thought about that. Chelsea's a really interesting one. And he was linked there before we got him, actually. So who knows?
Spurs liked him.
I can't see him doing that. I can't see Gabby Jesus doing that. I don't know, Matt. I think you're right to say that Nketiah would be quicker out the door. For me, I think it's so interesting what we do across that forward line. The more I think about it, the more I don't think we're going to do the big £100 million striker signing. Tony, that ship has sailed. Osimhen, I can't see it. Isak, I mean, what would Newcastle charge? And it doesn't sound like he's pushing for a move, Isak. So what would we do? And if that's the case, if it's going to be a wing forward that we sign, I don't know why you'd move Jesus. I think you'd say to yourself, well, Havertz is probably going to be first choice at nine. Trossard not far behind him. Jesus can cover every position across there. He knows the team. He knows the squad. You know, and if he fixes this surgery, you said it the other day, Matt, those first 10 games of Gabriel Jesus, I'd never seen anything like it. If he can get back to those levels, and let's not forget, by the way, we've seen some good stuff from him this season. It's not been a complete busted flush. Manchester City at home, he was absolutely brilliant on the right-hand side. The Nottingham Forest game, he got a man of the match, an assist and a goal, and I think he won us that game away from home against Forest. We've not had nothing from him. And if he's going to be a third-choice striker, a rotation option on the wing, I'm not kicking him out the door, especially when you're not going to get much money for him. What would you get, 20 million?
The other good thing about Gabby Jesus is he's good off the bench. Because if you want, because he, you know, you saw it in the Champions League, he came on, he can cause that chaos. Because you look at Eddie's one of the worst players off the bench. I think he's had one good cameo off the bench, which was Fulham at home in the beginning of the season, where he came on and looked really dynamic. But that was a full half, that wasn't 20 minutes. He can't get into games. Whereas Gabby Jesus has the ability to get into a game within 30 seconds, which is a really useful.
Here's what I think is going to happen here. I think Arsenal are going to age down. I think we've made terrible mistakes over the years when we let players tip over into 28 and 29, then there's absolutely no market. 27, you can put them on a four-year deal. You're going to get value off at the back end of it. You're getting a player coming into their prime. You're getting the max out of it. I think Arsenal are in a situation now where the first team players are all 24 or under. And if I were Arsenal, I would be looking, what's the next generation? Who's the next Gabby Jesus? Who can be Gabby Jesus with electric pace? Who can be him, but with goals and assists in abundance? The goal scoring problem is the biggest issue for me. You put him out wide, he's doesn't score many goals. You put him as a nine, he doesn't score many goals. He scored less than Eddie Nketiah this season. That's absolutely shocking. I think Arsenal are going to try and sell him and look for who has a massively high ceiling. Who's the next Mudryk hype train out there? And let's go and pick him up. Because we're at the stage now where we're kind of set in the front three positions. Jesus can't get into the side anymore. I don't think his ego is going to allow him to be the Eddie Nketiah of next season. He's too good and he's getting too old in his career to have to tolerate that sort of thing. I think that he'll be looking for minutes and more of a premier role in the side. I don't think he didn't come to Arsenal to be a bench player. He came to Arsenal to get away from that, and now he's right back there again. I think he'll exit in the summer, and I think we'll sign somebody like 18, 19, 20, 21 that can grow with the side, that can offer us something different, something that we don't have. Explosive pace is the thing that's been on my mind for a long time. We don't have a speed demon like Mudryk or Neto. It alarms me that so many Arsenal fans are looking at Neto and thinking that that's the solution when you've got Jesus, you know, that's one of the most unavailable players in the league. He's never managed more than 25 appearances in the Premier League since he's been at Wolves. We need somebody young, robust, creative, explosive. I want individual talent, but I want somebody at the start of their journey. I don't think we can afford a Sané in the side. I don't think we need a Sané. Well, everybody needs a Sané in the side, but then you're disrupting the flow of the side. I think we're going to look somebody with an extremely high ceiling. I actually wrote an article. I don't know whether you want to talk about some names. I wrote an article. It's on Substack at the moment. Le Grove is parked there for the minute. But Arsenal are going to be looking at a winger this summer. I think on the agenda is electric pace. I think that they're looking for somebody with a high ceiling. And I've got four names that excite me. And I'm going to run you past them. I sent you a video last night. I hope that you read the article and watched the video religiously, all 30 minutes of it, so you're experts. There are some controversial names on there. I'm going to talk about the controversial one first. I put Anthony Gordon on that list. Newcastle have financial problems. They're going to have to sell one of their stars. Anthony Gordon was in Liverpool's academy. He had a really good time at Everton, and he's been very effective in the Premier League. For Newcastle, he is not a fashion player. You are not going to see him on the catwalks in Italy. He is the type of guy that takes a Tesco's bag and lunch into work. But he's got nine goals, 11 assists, or one way or the other. And he's Premier League proven. He has an unbelievable work ethic. And he is extremely powerful and fast. But people don't like it. People do not want to be linked with someone called Anthony Gordon. It's not sexy enough for them. I want to put this one to you guys because I want to get the controversial one out the way first. What do you think?
I watch quite a bit of Gordon because I do the kickoff with True Geordie, who's obviously a Newcastle fan. He's a brilliant player. He's a really, really good player. And I've got to be honest, he's creeping towards my starting 11 for England because of the way he plays. But the way he plays, he's a real off-the-ball, running-behind player. And I don't know if that suits our system. I don't know if he suits exactly what we do. He's a bit Theo Walcott. He just wants to go behind direct early. He's not an expert at beating his man. He's not going to penetrate a low block. He's not massively creative. A lot of his assists are when he gets through and cuts it back to someone. And I don't know if you've watched The Overlap recently, where he did an episode of The Overlap where he was interviewed by Gary Neville. He's really attached to that Newcastle project. He sounds like a captain for Newcastle to me. And we do know that Newcastle have to sell because of PRS. There's a lot of links of Bruno Guimaraes to us at the moment. There's also talk of Isak being on a lot of people's radar. I think Isak's one of the best up-and-coming strikers in the world. But Gordon, for me, I'm not saying he's not a brilliant player. I think he's an absolutely excellent player. I think he'd cost you a huge amount of money to get him out of Newcastle. And I'm not quite sure he's the type that I want. In your article, Pete, you said something about a player who's almost like a system breaker. Someone who maybe moves out of the positional play that we love so much, but can just drop a shoulder and beat a man. And I think I was texting you guys after the Bayern Munich game saying that's what we need. And it, that Bayern Munich game made me miss Alexis Sanchez, someone who can receive outside of a block and then penetrate through it with dribbling, who can beat two men and shoot. And that would be the one for me. I'll give you a name in a minute. But yeah, for me, Gordon's a bit too off the ball.
All right, Matt, what do you think of Gordon?
But he's left-sided, right?
He can play across the front three. He's got goals and assists across the front three, even played as a striker.
Yeah, I think he's a decent player. I think the money will be too much. And I've mainly seen him on the left. I think we've got Martinelli and Trossard and the really glaring space that we need is someone who can play on the right.
All right. Okay, then let's move on to a curveball. There's a guy called Ben Mattison on Twitter, and he's like this fucking crazy scout, and he looks at all the best players in the world, and he highlighted a guy that I have been looking into. His name's Estevao Willian. Don't get thrown by the Willian. He plays for Palmeiras. He's playing in the same side as Endrick, who just moved to Madrid. Endrick looks like a sort of regen of Romario. We saw him against us in England when he was a bit of a difference maker. But this kid, who plays on the right, is being dubbed Messinho. He's extremely creative. He's fast. He has got that magic stardust that sometimes we feel that we lack. He's very young. I think he's 17 years old. But he is the sort of player that English teams never get. The top Brazilian talents never come to the Premier League. Part of that's cultural. Part of that's just because Madrid, Atleti and Barca are so deeply entrenched in Brazil and Argentina. Jacob, did you watch the video? What do you think of this kid? He looks a bit special. He has been linked to Arsenal previously. What do you think? Could Edu get the checkbook out and go and spend a little bit of cash down there?
I really like this one. I did watch the video. Messinho sounds like something a 12-year-old would come up with in terms of a player they would create on FIFA with all these tricks. But no, mate, I like it a lot. And I think that's one thing that there's always been links between us and the young players coming out of Brazil. Over the last few years, we were linked with Bruno Guimarães before he went to Lyon when he came out of Brazil. And I like those links. We were linked with Lucas Paquetá before he came out of Brazil. And that's another one that I wish we'd done. I think there's so much talent there. We were linked with Danilo, the midfielder at Forest.
And
I remember at the time thinking, oh, I don't know, is he good enough? And after a few months, after a little while at Forest now, he looks really, really good. The one thing I will say, we've just brought in the scout, the South American scout from Real Madrid, who found Endrick. So this is a very interesting link for those reasons, because that is one that I'd like to do. I'd like to find another little Martinelli. So, yeah, mate, you could sign me up to this one. Whether he's ready to come in and compete with Martinelli and Saka next season, I'm not so sure. This, for me, when these Brazilian guys come fresh out of Brazil, they always take a year or so, and I think we need someone. I know you said before that you feel like our front three is fairly settled. I think there's space for competition on the left-hand side. And I'm not sure a kid from Palmeiras is ready to come in and do that in August.
The balance with this signing is managers always want now players. They don't want to have to spend 3 years coaching them. They want players that can deliver trophies now, because the nature of football is that you could be out of a job in 6 months if this one player is relied upon and they fail. So that would be an interesting negotiation. Matt, did you take a look at the video? What did you think of Messinho?
Yeah, I mean, it does sound like something a 12-year-old would come with, but it absolutely works for me, because as soon as I heard that nickname, I'm like, just whatever it takes, 70 million, 80 million, 90 million, bring him in. I think the key question is he Vinicius or is he Marquinhos? Because we just went out and bought a promising Brazilian winger, who, to be fair to him, has scored in his debut and actually looked all right, but he's sinking without trace. We'll never hear or see from him ever again.
Wellington Silva,
you know all these players. So I think it's worth gambling on these players, but I think, again, it's all about price. After all, we were prepared to gamble 35 million on Fabio Vieira at similar stage, you know, after very, very few games. And, you know, we still don't know whether that was a good buy or a bad buy. I think the jury's still out. I think there's promising signs, but also less than promising signs. So I would absolutely bring him in, but I don't think you're bringing him in to be a Saka's understudy. I think you're bringing him in as an investment that might become something. It's like a Marquinhos signing.
I like the framing there. All right, let's move on to another player. Johan Bakayoko. If you played Championship Manager back in the day, there was a player called Bakayoko who was an absolute banger. He played for Montpellier, came to the Premier League, was not very good. Johan Bakayoko, we've actually had first-hand experience of him. He plays at PSV Eindhoven. He's 21 years old. He's netted 13 goals and landed 14 assists this season. He's fast. He's direct. He's good on the ball. Those kids coming out of Holland, they are a bit boom or bust. We've seen Anthony come over from Ajax, who's been a mega disaster. Jacob, you've probably seen Bakayoko in the flesh. He caused us all sorts of problems. What do you make of this player? And it, like, is it a bit dangerous going to pick players out of Holland?
Yeah, I can't do it. I'm sorry. We've watched Spurs try it. We've watched Manchester United get stung by it. I can't do it. I've had way too much banter with Man United fans this season about what Anthony's done there. It's just a risk for me. And he's super fast, Bakayoko. That's one thing I will say. I don't know about his end product. And he's another one where I don't know that he'd be ready to come in and compete. It's the hard thing about where we are. You mentioned Fabio Vieira, Matt. Like it's these Euro punts. It's so hard to know that a player's going to come in and be at our level because we're so good. Like we're at such a high level now. Like, do you know how good Trossard is? Like, do you know how good Leandro Trossard is? To be scoring this many goals for a team that are where we are in the league. If Leandro Trossard went to PSV, he'd be in the headlines every week in the Netherlands because of how good he is. Similar with Tadic.
Tadic's numbers when he went back to Ajax were disgusting. He'd get like 20, 30 assists a season. He was crazy.
So you look at Fabio Vieira, who was the talk of the town in Porto, by the way. You know, an absolute superstar over there. And he's come over here and not done much. Imagine what Emil Smith Rowe, how he would have been spoken about in Portugal. The goals that he scored in the Premier League at the age he was at the time. It's just so hard to equate a jump up in quality from those leagues to our league. And that's one of those. Because the difference between buying in Europe to buying in South America is you can get a player for 15, 20 million from South America. In Europe, you're looking at 40. You just are. So, I don't know. I watched him, as you say, in the flesh. He looked really exciting, but I just don't trust those players at the moment.
Matt, do you have trust issues when it comes to players from Holland?
Yeah. I think Chelsea signed Kesman years ago. He scored about 40 goals. He came in and absolutely flopped. I think we've seen this movie before, so it would not be my first choice to go there. Holland and Portugal, but there's always a bit of a question mark.
Yeah. And Germany as well. There's been a lot of attackers coming from Germany, and it doesn't always work out. Look at Jadon Sancho. Looked quick.
Man of the match last night.
I know. But we also watch a lot of him. It's the pace for me. It's the pace of the game.
Yeah. Okay, so now I'm going to throw it out to you two. If you could, I'm putting 70 million. I'm going to Venmo you 70 million. You can spend it however you want on a winger. No judgment. There'll be judgments, but this is a podcast. But where are you putting that money?
Do you want to go first, man?
Can I have two? I do Elise of Crystal Palace. Ooh. Or I would do Kudus of West Ham, who has just been announced that there's a release clause. And when that's announced with an Ornstein exclusive in The Athletic, it means the player wants out. And apparently he chose West Ham rather than Brighton because of the release clause. And I think it's really great. That's
interesting.
That's really smart from the agent. When you think about the agent of Mudryk versus the agent of Kudus, get him in the Premier League, get him in the shop window. They know the top clubs, like Premier League proven players, because they know there's always that adaptation period. It's absolutely spot on from his agent. And I respect that. So it'd be one of those two. And for the reason that I think they're both young and I think they would be reasonably happy to take a back seat to a Saka. But they get plenty of opportunity. They're Premier League ready, high ceilings. And so I'd go there. And I think they're also like 60 million pound players versus 100 million pound players.
Well, they're two very good options. Elise, rumoured to be up for sale this summer. Street footballer, incredible talent, outrageous flair, definitely an unlock player. Jacob, you've got 75 million. Where are you going to spend it?
I think Matt's won. I've got to be honest. I'm looking at my choices. I'm like, I think Matt's won, actually. I think I'm sold on Kudus. I hadn't seen that release clause news. So I like a kind of Rafael Leao, Marcus Rashford style of player, right? Big, fast, beat a man, score a goal. Leao's got £175 million release clause. Rashford is, you know, the wages and the age, blah, 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 blah. I like Nico Williams from Athletic Bilbao. I really like this guy. A lot of the stats lads on Twitter are a big fan of him. For me, he's that kind of dribble and beat your man. He can play right, he can play left. He hasn't scored loads of goals this season, but he's in the 92nd percentile for progressive carries. That's across Europe's top five leagues. He's in the 95th percentile for successful take-ons, beating his man one-on-one. And that's, again, across Europe's top five leagues. I really like this guy. Big, fast, and a £43 million release clause. So I can leave you some spare change to go for Bruno Guimaraes, which is what I really want in the summer. But yeah,
back to the Wenger days, looking after those pennies.
Yeah. Do you know, I don't suppose they've told us what the release clause is for Kudus.
No, I was going to look.
But... what did they buy him for? Was it? Was it?
Was it? It was low. It was quite a low fee, right?
How did West Ham get him for such a low fee, and United got absolutely rolled on Antony?
Because they called West Ham.
I remember, and not to besmirch anybody on another podcast, but I remember arguing online with Tim Stillman about Ajax and the transfer fee, and when a Man United were offering like 90 million. And his argument was it would break up the Ajax team and it would cause them problems in the Champions League. I was like, 90 million for that player. You just take that money and you run and you don't worry about anything else. That's probably the biggest robbery in transfer history. This player has got no future. You know what? I read somewhere the scouts from other clubs put him down as a £25 million player. Man United just go in and they just write I think their CFO left this week. He should leave, because some of the checks that he's been signing, like there has been no due diligence there. No due diligence. Jacob, where can people find you on the internet?
Find me at Jacob Hawley on Instagram.
Matt, where can people find you on the internet?
At Matt Candela on X or Twitter. I can't call it X.
It's Twitter, isn't it?
That'd be that guy. All right. And if you're listening to this and you liked it, give us a little 5-star review. If you're watching it on YouTube, join 80,000 people who subscribed. You'll always get the videos in your feed and you'll know about it when we go live. And on that note, I'll say ciao for now. Turn that loop off. Ciao for now.
Social Podcast Network. I'm Victoria Cash. Thanks for calling the Lucky Land Hotline. If you feel like you do the same thing every day, press 1. If you're ready to have some serious fun for the chance to redeem some serious prizes, press 2. We heard you loud and clear. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com right now and play over 100 social casino-style games for free. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply.